welcome to episode 2 of Popcorn and Lore. I'm JC, and across from me is...
Steph with an F.
That's right. And again, here we are with episode 2. So excited to be here. It has taken a long time for us to see this podcast come to fruition, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think we started talking about it like last September, and that was in 2022.
Yes. We were sitting around one day, and I was like, you know, what if we did a podcast together? What if we discussed all the things that we love, movies, books, TV shows, music, you name it. And here we are today to discuss that with you on this episode too. So on this episode, we're going to talk about the first movie we remember seeing in theaters and on TV. Steph, you want to take it away?
The first movie that I remember going to go see, and I want to preface this by, when I was younger, my family really didn't go to see the movies a lot. It was kind of one of those treats, maybe. But we went and saw Pokemon, the first movie, Mewtwo Strikes Back. And kids, just so you know, it's not the 2019 version that Strikes Back, was it Mewtwo Strikes Back Evolution or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. That was kind of like a remake-ish of it. No, this is the original OG Pokemon, the first movie.
Oh, so what did you like about it?
First off, they brought in Mewtwo, which they didn't really have in the series right then.
Okay.
I think by then you may have seen a Mew-ish in the sky or something, but I can't quite remember. It's been a while since I've seen that. But, the one thing is like, they really did a great storyline with it, with Ash and all of his friends. And, I mean, I don't want to give spoilers for a movie that, was released in, when was it? I want to say 1998, but let me bring up the exact information. Yeah, it was 1998 was when that movie was released. And Mewtwo Strikes Back. And the Rotten Tomatoes score was only 64% of audience liked it. But just remember, guys, back then we didn't have Rotten Tomatoes. We had just the normal critics. Right. And this was a movie panned to kids. And mostly kids who loved Pokemon.
And you said 98?
Yep, it was 98 when that movie was released. And I remember going to go see that. And then afterwards we went to Burger King and actually got the, because Burger King had the toys that went along with the movie. And I actually had one of the golden cards, the bigger, it wasn't gold, but the fake one, and had the Pokeball in it and everything. My sister got one also.
So at the time, prior to this movie, you were a Pokemon fan? You were into
huge
the show?
Huge Pokemon fan. Okay. What happened was, to get into it, is I was looking for a new show to watch in the afternoons because I was a kid. And so we had to make sure, you know, I was about in third grade-ish, and my sister, she was still kind of in the Barney phase, and my grandmother was very particular about, and my mom too, about making sure we didn't watch anything that was too violent or just not something that was non-educational in a sense, or at least didn't bring anything to the table.
Right.
And so I stumbled upon Pokemon. And one of my friends liked it, and so she introduced that to us, and so we watched an episode with our family. And now, granted, our grandmother and mom didn't really like the episodes, not in a bad way, just it wasn't geared towards them.
Right.
But it had some great lessons in them, and just the Pokemon, just fantastic. Still to this day, Charizard all the way. I know my sister is a Pikachu fan, but Charizard. And just Charmander, Charmeleon, Charizard, all of them. Love them. That's the evolution, by the way.
You know, one of the great things about this podcast is we're going to get into the contrast between myself and Steph. And one of the things about it that you'll find is that she has this plethora of knowledge on all these things that when she starts talking, you'll see my face and I'll be like, what? And this is one of those things. So it'll be fun and educational for myself and for
this movie was released a year after you were born.
That's right.
You know?
Yes.
And so what was your first movie you remember going to see in theaters?
So I remember, And this is crazy because it wasn't too long after I was born. But 2001, the gem that is Monsters, Inc., Pixar's Monsters, Inc. And I remember, it's funny that you mentioned Burger King, because I remember going to McDonald's before the movie. And for those of you who've seen Monsters, Inc., I hope many of you have, because it's a great movie. Even if it is a Pixar movie and you're like, oh, that's for kids, Pixar movies are for everybody, yeah. Right? Well, I remember going to McDonald's, and of course you get the Happy Meal toy with the Happy Meal, and I remember getting a door, and that's one of the you know, the motifs of Monsters, Inc., is every child's got a door, every monster's assigned to a door to a child. I don't know if my parents planned that. I don't know if they had any idea that that was going to be at McDonald's. But I remember going to the movie, and I remember just being really immersed in this world and really enjoying the film overall. And I don't want to sound too philosophical with it, but it's a pretty deep movie for what some people might call a kid's movie. It's got emotion. It's got kind of dark, you know, moments in it. Mr. Waternoose is pretty creepy.
Yeah.
But just a fun movie overall. Monsters University is okay. It's not anything compared to Monsters, Inc. But I could go on and on about that.
Well, and that's the great thing about, kids' movies in general, a lot of the time, they do have deeper meanings in them.
Yes.
And especially, like, with Disney and others, like with the Pokemon movie, it's scientists who genetically created a new Pokemon. And that was back then. You know, there was starting to be genetic testing mm-hmm. to try to create a sheep and some other kind of animals. And, you know, this takes it to a horrific end on other stuff.
Right.
But, you know, like Monsters, Inc., it dove into, the monsters underneath the bed.
Yes.
But also that world itself of what do you do when the one thing that powers your world is starting to not be enough or starting to fail.
That's right. And the one thing that powers your world is at the expense of human children, which is what the movie was about. And these two monsters, Mike and Sully, coming to the realization that, hey, we can do better than what we're doing right now.
Yeah.
But fantastic movie. The animation, anything Pixar does, it's so colorful and vibrant and just eye-catching. It's a great
movie. Oh, yeah. Pixar and Disney have always done very great with that stuff.
And to your point, you know, the whole idea of a monster under the bed, monster in the closet kind of thing. I don't remember in particularly being afraid of a monster under my bed. But that is a thing as a kid where you're like, what's that, you know, shadow? What am I seeing? And you turn on the light and it's a pile of clothes, you know, or whatever.
And you always, you know, you always have someone check the closet just to make sure nothing's in there. You know, I remember having to do that.
But that opening scene, ba-da-da-da-da, ba-da-da-da. I have that in my head. And I'm 25 years old today. I'll be 26 pretty soon here. And I still, that's the power of movies. And that's what I really want to get across with our podcast, is stories are powerful.
Oh, yeah.
So even like the Pokemon movie that you saw, that's made an impression on you.
Both of our movies had themes of friends, whether they're, you know, monsters trying to scare kids or they're, you know, between a person and a Pokemon, those friendships and how deep those actually go.
Right.
And, you know, how people can overcome different things because of the, not only just the power of friendship, but because they stand for something.
Right.
You know, and I'm going to say in the Pokemon movie, spoilers alert here going on, Ash, quote unquote, dies-ish.
Oh.
And it's Pokemon that save him, really. And it's, you know, it was a darker theme. But just like that darker theme in Monsters, Inc., you know, that the darker thing of, like I said, the realization that something is wrong and being the only ones to start standing up, saying something is wrong.
Right.
And this isn't right. And especially like meeting the little girl, which I can't remember her name.
Yeah.
Or they call her.
They called her Boo.
Boo. Yes. That's what they called her. Yeah. But, you know, just those kind of themes and everything kind of go through a lot of those movies. And especially as kids, I mean, kind of taught us or may have reinforced what our parents were telling us.
Right.
You know, on different stuff and to think for yourself.
No, you're absolutely right. I found a little interesting tidbit here It talks about the director on Wikipedia. It says the storyline took on many forms during production, talking about Monsters, Inc. Doctors, that's the director's last name, Doctors. Original idea featured a 30-year-old man dealing with monsters that he drew in a book as a child, coming back to bother him as an adult. Each monster represented a fear he had, and conquering those fears caused the monsters to eventually disappear. Now, obviously, the movie itself is very different from that original concept. But one thing that I find really interesting, and again, you know, you could have some people that laugh at this, but I think it goes to the point. Really, I think what it shows is that monsters and humans end up being friends and coexisting. Yeah. And I think at the end of the day, we need a little bit more people getting along. Seeing each other's differences for what they are, but still treating each other with value. Well,
and giving people a chance to grow. Yes. And to know that what they understood may or may not have been wrong. That's or right. Not quite right, but to give them a chance to grow.
Yes. And honestly, too, by the end of the movie, spoiler alert, you do find out that comedy, that laughter is the best medicine. Yeah. It does fuel the city, fuel the town, and it just a heartwarming film. I might have to bring that in, and we could just play the music. We can't play the music. It's Disney Pixar.
Unfortunately, copyright reason, we can't play that.
But just picture that opening theme in your head. It's just classic.
Oh, yeah. Well, just go to YouTube. Yeah. You know, turn that on. Just listen to it real quick. Same thing with, like, the Pokemon, the first movie. I know the Pokemon 2000 was the next movie, and it was great also. Mm-hmm. By number three, it was still good, but I was starting to get older, and so it was not as much into Pokemon.
Sure.
Of course, that is reverse now. I mean, I'm in my 30s, and so I'm playing Pokemon games again.
Are they still making Pokemon movies?
Yeah, they're still making Pokemon TV series. I actually think, they just wrapped up. Ash has finally not caught them all, but has finally won the big championships and is retiring. But they're going to be coming out with a new Pokemon series, and a rumor has it that it's his daughter.
Oh.
That's just a rumor, though.
Huh.
So we'll find out more as that goes on, and we'll probably talk about it real quick again.
Yes.
Again, there's a lot of cartoons. I know in a couple episodes here, we're going to be talking about Saturday morning cartoons, just, you know, after school cartoons, because that brings in a lot of different other series. Also, different ages at the time of, you know, talking about, you know, when I watched when I was a little younger compared to when I was a teenager. You know,
right.
It's a little different.
Right.
I know one thing. Now, looking here, what was the first movie? And this was hard for me to remember. What was, like, the first movie you kind of at least vaguely remember maybe being the first one you saw on TV?
TV. Okay, yeah. So we're kind of getting into VHS tapes here. And, you know, it's funny. I do remember the VHS. I had a VCR. But I, as a child, I watched a lot of Franklin the Turtle. I don't know if anybody listening heard of that, but that was a thing. That was a big thing when I was a kid. And then on top of that, I remember one of, like, the first movies that I really, really enjoyed and got into. And this was probably, Stephanie, can you pull up, when did High School Musical come out? The first?
I want to say it was 2000-something, but here, let me pull it up.
Okay. Well, obviously, before then, I had seen some movies, but that was the first one I really remember seeing on TV and going, wow, this is pretty great.
It was 2006.
2006. Okay. So that's obviously a few years removed from us talking about Monsters, Inc. here.
Yeah.
But great movie. We'll probably do an episode dedicated to High School Musical and just that series. So I won't get too deep into it, but
yeah,
that set my expectations for high school.
And
when I got into high school, I was severely let down.
Yeah, and not to go too deep into it, but that movie was actually created as a Disney TV, Disney Channel movie.
That's correct.
It's the later movies that became where they were able to be released in theater. I think number three was the one that was released in theater.
Okay.
But we can go more deep into that one on that episode.
Yes.
But that was a cultural change too on a lot of things on our end, at least on mine in high school. You know, musicals had just started becoming popular again.
Oh.
And so that really hit hard and good there with those movies. I remember back in high school, I was too cool. I was too cool for, you know, the Disney Channel. Secret was I was watching the Disney Channel. I just want some of my friends to know.
See, now everybody knows.
Yeah, now so everyone knows.
Hopefully your friends are listening.
Well, and looking back at those days too, the first movie I remember watching on TV and or VHS, it could have been either which one. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I was like 3 years old. And the only reason why I remember this is because it was our Child's Play. So it was Chucky, the original, movie. No. I was like 3 years old. It was scary, but I wanted to stay up with my cousins. I remember very little about it, but I was traumatized by it. So I don't want to go too much into that movie, but
right,
and we'll do that on a Halloween episode, maybe.
Right. Well, and I will say, for those of you who were big into DreamWorks as a kid, or maybe you like DreamWorks now, and I'm glad I remembered this before we closed out of this episode, but two movies that I really, really enjoyed as a kid. I still love them. I think they're just, you know, masterpieces of, you know, cinematic enjoyment. But you have Moses, Prince of Egypt, which is a fantastic interpretation. I mean, it's loosely based on the story, but it's based on the story of Moses found in the Book of Exodus. And it's a great story, great music. That's really what most people know it for, I think, is the music. But you also have Joseph, King of Dreams. And I don't think it's as popular as the Moses story that DreamWorks did, but it's also well done, colorful, bright, just enjoyable, not only for kids, but for adults as well.
And I'm trying to look it up real quickly, but I think that was in the age it was starting to become, we were moving from 2D animation into 3D animation. I don't think it was quite there. The 3D animation yet, but I remember seeing that movie. Now, I don't come from a religious background, especially back when I was a kid, but that movie, we owned it on VHS, and that was a very good movie.
98 is when Prince of Egypt came out.
I think they were still using 2D animation, but they were starting to look at 3D animation.
And one of the really cool things about that movie, you've got a pretty solid cast. You've got Val Kilmer. You've got Ralph Fiennes, I believe is how his last name is said. You've got Sandra Bullock, Steve Martin, Martin Short. It's a pretty good cast.
Voice actors. And back in the day, before, I want to say it was, I think it was Robin Williams with Aladdin. That really kicked it off. And I'm assuming probably before that a little bit too, but he's the one that really kicked it off with mainstream actors voicing these characters and the singing. Because before it was just voice actors who were doing it, which to preface, there's no difference other than the fact that, you know, they're just using their voice to an animated movie, which actors and actresses, you know, they nowadays do both. But back in the day, they only really did, you know, live action movies. And so, but that really kicked that off to be able to have all those different characters or different actors and actresses be in those movies.
Well, and I've got crazy respect for voice actors because, you know, it's one thing to be an actor in front of a camera. And I'm not saying that that doesn't take talent. It does. Oh, 100%. But to bring to life a world and a character that you really are not seeing apart from, you know, some artwork. That takes a certain skill set that I don't think every actor has.
No, and I mean, because you're not, you back in the day, you may have been in a room with some people, but some of them, at least from some of the documentaries I've watched, they were just by themselves and having to you know, figure it out and make it sound amazing, which luckily enough, like TV shows, like they had animated TV shows and all like that to pull those voice actors from. And, you know, other ones that, of course, came out through there of learning how to do that. But, you know, that profession is, I mean, very hard because, again, just like in radio and sometimes in podcasting-ish, but really, I mean, they have to hone their skills and have that voice. And those voices stick with generations.
Absolutely.
I remember, you know, like some of the VHS movies that I also remember, especially because we had a lot of the collection, was Disney movies.
Yes.
Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, Lion King. Those are just three of the ones that I remember the most that we watched a bunch. Yeah. And, you know, like you just hear that little beat or you hear one person say one sentence.
Right.
and you just remember every, you know, the feeling you had back then when you were watching it as a kid, you know, just, you know, Ariel and Sebastian singing, mm-hmm. you know, Belle wanting a better world. And you didn't really understand it as much
right.
back then. But then looking back at it now,
it's deep.
It's, yeah. There's whole other meanings behind it. And I love that they made movies, like we said before, that were made for kids, but could also be loved by teens and adults.
Yes. And well done, too, as far as the yep. animation. To your point on Prince of Egypt, I just pulled up here on Wikipedia. It says, the film has a blend of traditional animation and computer-generated imagery created using the software from Toon Boom Animation and Silicon Graphics.
Yep.
So it's one thing to make an animated movie that is great for kids and whatnot, but to be able to create an animated movie, and not just a movie, but a world
yeah.
where the animation is well done and it draws adults in as well.
And that's... they were starting to use features that nowadays we just take for granted.
Yes.
You know, because, I mean, now we have a CGI, you know, whole Lion King movie.
Yes.
You know, and other items, or like the Life of Pi movie yes. with the animated tiger, you know, and I think it's CGI
yeah.
tiger.
And I almost think we look back on it now with a sense of taking it for granted, because you look at, like you mentioned, Lion King. I loved Peter Pan and Aladdin. I think I still have those VHS tapes, and you know, you watch some of these, and yes, you can tell it's a little bit older compared to what we have now, but for the time,
yeah,
it was great.
But the themes and the messages they were pushing yes. through. Now, yes, there are some bad ones in there. Like, you know, some people take, you know, Little Mermaid, her wanting to change her world because of a guy.
Right.
And yeah, you could take it that way too. But you can also look at it, like I look at it from the perspective, that was just one little part of it.
Yeah.
She just wanted to do her own thing and learn about this new world.
Right.
And yes, the guy kind of thing helped a little bit too. Beauty and the Beast, you know, people are like, she had Stockholm syndrome, which
right.
I don't fully believe. And here's why. Because she left, and the only reason why she went back was because he saved her. Now, she wasn't going to go back just because he was saying so. She went back because she's a good person and wanted to help save him. And then he let her go. Now, yes, there's a little bit of, you know, the talk about that.
Yes. Well, and again, in response to what you were saying, it's been a while since I've actually sat down and watched the animated film. I need to do this.
Yeah.
And maybe we could do a whole episode devoted to Beauty and the Beast.
Oh, but we can't. Well,
I remember one part in that movie where he puts her in this dungeon and he's trying to be nice, you know, Cogsworth and Lumiere. Is that yep. his name?
Yes.
They come and they say, sir, you really need to try to be nice. You know, the poor girl hasn't eaten. Well, they bring her some food and she says, I'm not going to eat with you. He's like, well, then you'll starve. And one of the great things about Belle is it's almost like that didn't deter her at all
yeah.
from just being her.
Yeah.
Of course.
And she started falling in love with him. And yes, she was yes. a captive right then. That was after she already saved him.
That's right.
And technically, she probably could have still run away. After he was hurt, because there was no, he wasn't going to be able to chase after her.
Right.
You know, it was only because of her that he was even saved.
Right.
Now, of course, she did put him in that position too.
Right. And really, in most ways, I would consider Belle the hero or the heroine of the movie.
Yeah.
I mean, she brought this change to his heart. And yes, did she learn to see him in a different way? Sure.
Yeah.
But I do think overall the change and the catalyst for the overall story was Belle.
Yeah. And there's the other cast members too, yes, in that.
Absolutely.
I mean, Chip, he was huge on the plot to save there and everything. And I think everyone just kind of, it gave that realization to different things. Like Belle learned a lesson. Gaston learned nothing.
Right.
But, you know, Gaston's right. Gaston.
Yes. Well, and that's one thing that, and I'm sure there are people out there like Gaston. I know there are. But one thing that's always kind of bothered me now, looking back at Beauty and the Beast, is he had no change whatsoever, just as a person. And I know that can be realistic, but there was no growth on Gaston's part. He truly is this stunted man-child that, and, you know.
But I think it brought looking at how the Beast was.
Yes.
When Belle first, like when her father first met him, when we were introduced to him.
Yes.
You know, and the differences of how he chose to grow.
Right.
And to change. He didn't have to, but chose to.
Yes.
And then how Gaston didn't or couldn't.
Yes.
Either which one.
And that contrast of Gaston is depicted as this big strapping man with, you know, great muscle, good looks, but he's a total jerk.
Oh, total dweeb.
And
oh.
you have the Beast, who, if any of us here today had seen, you know, the Beast, we'd probably be a little freaked out. But deep down, Belle brought out this really kind, caring person.
Yeah.
So again, there's a lot of deep themes in these movies.
And I was going to bring some facts to you all, but my computer has restarted. But the Rotten Tomato score, I think, was at like 93% for the tomato score. And then for audience, it was like 91% score. Wow. And I remember Lion King was 93. So Lion King, to me, also was one of the
big
movies.
About the original, correct?
The original, yes. Okay. The OG Lion King from, can't remember the exact year, but I want to say it was 1991. 1994. Okay. It was either 1991 or 1994. It was between that time period. But you know, we're talking about the Renaissance with Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, and Lion King. You know, that was a Renaissance because Disney before that was kind of going into the dark era of, you know, like the Black Cauldron didn't do well, and other ones weren't. The Mouse Detective was starting to kind of kick that off a little bit.
I'm showing a little bit of ignorance here. Was there a movie called Pete the Dragon?
Yeah, Pete the Dragon.
Is that Disney?
Yeah, that was Disney. Okay. They have a couple different iterations of that. They made a new one sometime in the 2000s. But the original one, it was a lot older. I want to say it was in the 80s.
Wow.
70s or 80s. Yeah, it was a little older.
So when did Beauty and the Beast come out?
Beauty and the Beast was 1991.
1991.
Yeah.
Because okay. For some reason, I thought you said that was Lion King.
No, I think Lion King was 1994.
Four. Okay.
Yeah. Wow. I know Little Mermaid was 1989 because that was the year I was born. November the 17th, wow. To be exact.
Okay. You know, it has been cool to see these live action remakes. However, they will never be, of course, what the originals were. They just won't. And maybe it's just for us the nostalgia of having those and growing up with those. I'm sure for the younger, newer audiences, that the new Aladdin will be this generation's Aladdin. I mean, that's probably going to be just how it is. The Lion King will be, you know, their Lion King.
Yeah.
But you can't beat, in a lot of ways, the animated medium, because you can do things with animated characters and worlds that you can't do with actual people. The expressions, mannerisms. So,
And that's really came to effect with Lion King, because there was a lot more human mannerism.
Yes.
And just the way things were animated back then and done to make it, you know, to make it a little more relatable. And so in the new in the CGI version of I can't remember the year. I want to say it was 2000. I got to look it up, but between 2016 and 2019, somewhere around that range. I want to say closer to 18-ish, maybe. Okay. But we can look it up, the exact date. Sorry, my computer's
restarted, you're good.
So I lost all of the awesome info. But
and I know the original topic was movies we remember seeing on TV.
Yeah, but
and I'm
this
realizing
also equates.
Most of these movies I'm mentioning are VHS tapes that, you know, which is great. I mean, that's really what we grew up on. And now I look at it, and you've got more things going to streaming, which we can talk about later. But it's been interesting to see the evolution, because I remember the VHS tapes. I have tons of VHS tapes, but I've got a whole library of DVDs.
Well, and VHS tapes almost didn't happen, because back in the day, like it would have still happened, but like they were very expensive, like really expensive back then. They started lowering the prices, and part of that, it's not just because of Disney, but Disney was a huge part of doing that. They would release movies from their vault every so often, and you know, the Disney vault, and you know, doing that kind of thing. That this is a, you know, the new movie. It's not really a new movie, but it for another generation. Right. They could do that. But, you know, before that, it was mostly if you didn't catch it in the theaters, they would replay it in theaters.
Right.
And so, like, Snow White played for many years in theaters because that was where the money was. And then when VHS and home DVD was coming out, VHS for a long time. It really helped the home market, but also brought movies. Sorry, my computer restarted, and then I just remembered all my notes went away too.
Oh,
I guess I didn't save my notes.
Darn.
You know, looking back at all this stuff, it's really huge to the point where, you know, we as generations don't always remember or realize, you know, the generation before us, they didn't have that kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
Like now, we could watch it on streaming. Right. We don't have to go out and buy a DVD of it. You don't have to get it, you know. Now, if you want to see it in theaters, of course I would say go and see it in theaters.
Yes.
But if you have to wait, or there's some movies, it's no longer a home release, it's a streaming release.
Yeah.
Or like Netflix.
Well, and it's interesting, you mentioned Snow White. And, you know, I'm thinking of all the Disney movies that I've been bringing up here during this episode. I think Snow White, Cinderella, and I feel like there's another one I'm missing. I feel like those were earlier Disney, probably earlier than Peter Pan and Lion King. And correct me if I'm wrong, Stephanie. But I think about that.
Oh, yeah.
I've probably seen those once, but the others that we've talked about, those were my movies. And I think those were probably yours, too, as a millennial at that point. Well, you're a millennial now.
Yeah.
But, you know, at that point in life, that's what we had. And, yeah, like I said, I've seen Snow White, but it was nothing compared to watching Lion King or Aladdin.
And I love going back and seeing, and this also harkens back to, like, horror movies to me. Like, going and seeing how they did it back in the day.
Because,
like, you don't realize looking at it, like, a lot of those scenes from, you know, from Snow White, from Cinderella. Yeah, from Cinderella, from Sleeping Beauty, they all had some scenes in it that those three movies have all used.
Yeah.
And others have too. Because
that was the other one, Sleeping Beauty. I was trying to remember.
Because of how it was done, you know, it was different layers of drawings put together to make one scene.
Yeah. And what's masterful about the way you look at, like you said, Snow White, Sleeping Beauty, Peter Pan, even Aladdin, I believe, those were not original Disney stories. The movies was, you know, Disney's adaptation of the stories. Yep. And it, for me, because I would have had no familiarity with any of those. I've read, I think as a child, I read a little bit of Peter Pan. But those movies were really what launched me into appreciating those stories. Or, you know, what they were at the time. And obviously, you look back now, thankfully, we have progressed as a society to not think that, you know, every woman needs, you know, to be rescued from a castle with a dragon or that kind of thing.
Well, and also representation.
Yes.
And doing good, authentic, like actual representation, not just filming it in to get it in there.
Yes.
You know, like Moana and, I mean, Pocahontas was one of those, it was meant to be, but it kind of fell short, especially when you look at the actual history.
Yes.
But like Moana and, some of the other ones that are actually trying to actually pay homage to the actual cultures, and not trying to, you know, like not make fun of them is really, but like actual show representation on there. Like even Princess and the Frog, which I feel like should have been a better movie than it was. I love the representation in there. And now we're having as much as I'm kind of like on the edge about Little Mermaid, the remakes of these movies, I kind of look at them as their own separate entities.
Mm-hmm.
If I try to compare them to the original, to me, the original is always going to be the best because that's what I grew up with. But I love the representation they're doing in The Little Mermaid. And to me, I know some people are up in arms about it. It's a mermaid.
Yes.
It's a fantasy. It doesn't matter. But I love that it's bringing, like, little girls can look at that movie now that, you know, are African American and be like, that's my Little Mermaid.
Right.
And that's great. And I think that's fantastic. And again, I can't really speak to feeling that way because, again,
right.
privilege wise, I'm a white girl. So,
and I will say, I don't know if they can see it on the camera. Probably not. But for those of you who don't know, I am on wheels, AKA I use a wheelchair. And one of the things that is really cool, and, you know, there's a whole debate. Like you said, people get hot and cold over these things. I am not somebody that looks at a movie and says, well, they needed a wheelchair user in that movie. They needed a person with a disability in that movie.
Yeah.
However, it is nice to see that. And when it's done well and it's done naturally and it's authentic and it's true to what a lifestyle yeah. like that would be, kind of, sort of. Then I really appreciate it.
I want to bring in, and we're going to talk about TV series and all that kind of stuff later. One that I started watching later, after it actually already had aired mostly, Friday Night Lights. They did a great representation of a kid who had a spinal injury
okay.
from a football game.
Okay.
And like, cool. he actually, cause like I listened to their podcast.
Yeah.
And their podcast is, oh, what is it? It's More Than Football. And they were talking about, he was talking about how he actually went and studied with, paraplegics and, okay. Everyone else to get that natural feel to it and how them and the creators of that were really like, can someone actually do what they wanted them to do on the scene?
Yeah.
Or was it, you know, fantasy, you know what I mean? Like they wanted to make sure they were authentic as they could be.
Right.
Because they were trying to tell an actual story. And now he is not, he can walk and everything.
Yeah.
But you know that they wanted to make sure that, you know, the right, I don't know if homage is the right word, but they wanted to make sure it was done correctly.
Yes. Yeah, so I just wanted to make a little note there about representation. I do think it's important. I'm not somebody that's going to, you know, get too excited or angry about things, but I do think it is important to see that because most things that I grew up with watching, it was sort of the same thing for me. I never saw anybody that was in my situation. And so, like, for instance, more recently when Shazam 2, Fury of the Gods came out, they have a character, and he's in the first movie as well. But I felt like they really explored more of his psyche in the second one. But Freddie Freeman is a kid that uses a crutch. He's got some sort of disability. And they explore this idea of him having a love interest and getting bullied and that kind of stuff. So that's all very real. And I really appreciate that DC, despite they're not nearly good as, you know, movies when it comes to, like, the MCU. But DC's doing better, I think. So, but they did a really good job with that. I really appreciate it.
And DC's always been really good about their TV series.
Yes.
And really, like, hearkening back to that. And they're getting better and better, too.
Because I've often had people tell me, because I have said before, and one thing for those of you listening to this podcast, if you continue to listen, I really love superheroes. And so, but I've often heard, well, you know, you've got Professor X. Okay. That's true. Professor X is cool. But there's nothing, like, I can't relate to that. It's much more relatable to me to see a Peter Parker getting bullied in high school than it is to see a Professor X at an academy for gifted youngsters, I think is what they call it. And so when I see something that's new and it's fresh and it's not just, oh, this guy's in a wheelchair. Like, when that's just all that it is, but there's no exploring what the person goes through.
Yeah.
It's not as interesting.
Well, and everyone has, with everything, not everyone has the same experiences. Yeah. Experiences in
that's
everything.
Right.
And again, like I can't talk to, about like different races or anything like that because,
sure.
you know, I'm white. And so, but being able to show the representation, whether it's, you know, just using different actors and actresses in there, actually, you know, having people who are in wheelchairs or having the different disabilities.
Yeah.
I know a lot of the TV shows nowadays, especially for kids, are starting to talk more about like mental health.
Mm-hmm.
Also, right. Showing the generational differences between. You know, how our parents were raised and how, you know, the different things on there, and also just being open to, you know, I mean, you want to see yourself on the screen.
Yes.
And yeah. be represented on and, there in some form of way.
And I don't think that is a sign of selfishness. Perhaps no. You could make that argument, but I think it's more wanting to see something you could relate to yeah. on the screen. For instance, Finding Nemo, I had read somewhere that Nemo's little Finn, or Lucky Finn, I think is what yeah, it's called Lucky in the movie. Finn. That's his disability. And I always thought that was an interesting way to put it, because it's a fish. You know, you don't yeah. think about a fish with a disability. But you think about Nemo. Nemo was not very accepted in the beginning. Kind of had a hard yeah. time fitting in. Kind of awkward.
He struggled.
Yeah, he struggled. And I think by the end of the movie, and Finding Dory is cool too. It's again, not as good as Finding Nemo, but... you know, that movie also is another movie that you can look at and you can go, okay, you've got this kid who he's got this father. They don't really, they've kind of got into a heated argument. He gets lost.
Yeah.
Again, deep story. But we kind of got off on a rabbit trail, so I do appreciate everybody sticking with
yeah.
us. But,
and again, yeah. you're listening to Popcorn and Lore yes. With JC and Steph with an F. Yes. And, but like you were saying with that, for Nemo, for him, it was just a life. It was right. He just had a little fin.
Yeah, and he didn't know any different.
But for his dad, it was the world is scary out there because yes. he wanted to make sure it was yeah. safe for his son.
Yes, and I will say, you know, my parents, I was raised in a very supportive home as far as my disability goes. And so I have never let anything stop me. I've always been told, hey, if you want to do something, you can do it. But that is a very real... worldview. Again, not to get too deep, some people can watch this movie and say, well, where do you see that? Well, we see it, so we're talking about it. But I think one of the things that's important here to see is that as a person with a disability, it is normal to have those types of reactions where people look at you and say, well, the world is scary, you need to be careful.
Yeah.
So
well, and again, like learning lessons from movies.
Yes.
I mean, that shouldn't be where kids only learn stuff from.
Right.
But that's a great way to like push, you know, like those themes of friendship, those themes of being, you know, being accepted
yes.
for who you are, no matter what. Right. And, you know, just having someone to relate to on the screen.
Well, everyone, thanks for listening to this second episode of Popcorn and Lore. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we have, and please tune in for the next episode.
What we will be talking about next is cartoons that yes. we grew up with back in the 90s, early 2000s, when we were kids, teenagers, and just the nostalgia of back then. Probably thank you for tuning in to Popcorn and Lore. Check us out on the Branson Podcast Network, also on Spotify or anywhere you get streams.
YouTube.
And
keep on imagining.